But the power law is making a bunch of waves through Bitcoin Twitter. So what do you make of all of this? And do you still believe that we should not be pricing the new system in the current fiat system?
I categorically believe that we should. And that system has to, it either blows up completely and fails, or it attacks Bitcoin from layer two. What would an attack look like from layer two? It would look like first concentrated in ETFs right now. That's what you're doing. You're front running institutions and you're front running governments. Governments are going to be forced to. So let's just play this out. If Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, and so today, most people don't know it, but they're inside a system that's forcing them. If Bitcoin is not a medium of exchange, it is not a sufficient store of value in time. We already have all of the technology to take this to, and the protocol stack to take this to 8 billion people right now. It's a mental game, and it's a mental game because...
Another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Jeff Booth, the author of Price of Tomorrow, back again. And Jeff, last time we had you on, you told me that we should not be pricing the new system of Bitcoin in the current fiat system. But the power law is making a bunch of waves through Bitcoin Twitter. So what do you make of all of this? And do you still believe that we should not be pricing the new system in the current fiat system?
I categorically believe that we should not be pricing the new system in the fiat system. And anything that does that on top of you're reinforcing, I'm trading Bitcoin for a piece of paper to price the world. Yeah, so anything that's doing that is reinforcing a centralization of a function against a kind of US dollar backed system, which would centralize Bitcoin in time. So I categorically believe that this needs, if Bitcoin is not a medium of exchange, it is not a sufficient store of value in time.
And I love that. And so, you know, let's dive into that a little bit more. Do you see Bitcoin moving more towards a medium of exchange opposed to a store of value? Because it seems like the way that the US is kind of trending towards with holding Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset, that's how they're looking at it, as more of like the digital gold. Where do you see this whole Bitcoin system moving? And do you think that it should be looked at more of a medium of exchange and it's just looked at as a store of value just because of where we're at and everything? Or do you think of, you know, that it should be looked as more of a medium of exchange and it's just not right now?
Well, I should ask you the opposite. I should ask you, what do you think? And so I know what I think. I know it has to be a medium of exchange. And I also know that the path to becoming a medium of exchange goes through store of value and medium of exchange. And then I also know, if you realize that you couldn't control Bitcoin at the base layer, if you couldn't centralize it, what would you do?
Right. Hey, I'm...
Go ahead.
You're answering it there. I mean, I personally believe it's a great medium of exchange. I think that there's some issues right now as far as like scaling and everything like that with the Lightning Network and everything like that. So I'm not quite sure that we're there to the point where we could get 8 billion people on Bitcoin, you know, in a few years or anything like that. But I do think
you finish. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I think that's the way it's going, but I don't know if we're quite there yet. And I think the mentality of the West right now, too, is, you know, we're in a spending economy. So they look at the devaluing currency. So it's a very HODL mentality, at least in the U.S., where, I mean, I see in Latin America and other places, they're more willing to spend. But I'm not quite sure that we're there yet in the U.S.
We already have all of the technology to take this to, and the protocol stack to take this to 8 billion people right now. It's a mental game, and it's mental game because most people think prices should go up in the world, and they are reinforcing a system where prices go up. And the only reason prices go up is because money is manipulated. So if you're doing that in Bitcoin, then you were part of the thing that's driving the centralization. If you're doing that, then what will happen on top of Bitcoin is it will get centralized at layer two, and you'll be working in a fiat instrument on top of Bitcoin, thinking it's going up, and it'll limit the potential of Bitcoin because all that would happen is, because remember, these systems are totally incongruent together. In one system, the free market system, prices fall to the marginal cost of production. So we've talked about this extensively. So in the free market, because we use things that give us more value, prices fall, deflation. That is the world you should live in. And the only way that that is, and but you, but so that, so prices don't rise naturally. They rise unnaturally because the money is being manipulated. So if you're pricing from Bitcoin, you'll see all other things are falling, exactly like I said. If you're taking Bitcoin into your piece of paper to be able to price everything, then it looks like prices are still rising. And I would venture to say most people, even in Bitcoin, don't quite get what we just talked about there. And so these systems are completely opposites. So they cannot coexist together. One system needs to make prices rise. One system allows prices to fall through the free market. So as a derivative of that, then the system that makes prices rise has to concentrate and steal more from you over time. So if you're it has to convince you to stay in it. And over time, as that central, so it's a centralizing force, right? And that centralizing force is a bigger government force, and all of these things that are consequences of not allowing a free market prices to fall are consequences that get worse. So if you're inside that system, then that system it either blows up completely and fails, or it attacks Bitcoin from layer two. What would an attack look like from layer two? It would look like first concentrated in ETFs and other things and derivatives. And because most of the people in the world have seen wealth, not real wealth accumulating, but the wealth coming from extraction accumulating, from financialization of assets, they would look to financialize Bitcoin too. And you would see Bitcoin as a store of value that you could financialize and play games and derivative games on top of. That is a centralizing force. It has to be, because it's not the free market. But we can expect, if you're pricing from Bitcoin going up, most people would get caught into that because they would think they're winning, because they would be winning relative to other people that don't hold Bitcoin. Well, they're still losing and contributing to that. Keep reminding, they're incongruent together. They're incompatible. One system subsumes the other. The centralization subsumes Bitcoin, or Bitcoin consumes the centralization. And for Bitcoin to kind of fulfill its promise, what you and I are talking about, what Jack Mallers was talking about, what many with a deep understanding of what Bitcoin is talking about, is the operating system of the world, and therefore it has to be used as a currency. With where Lightning is right now, Lightning / Liquid and Fediment, we already have the technology to be able to, we already have the protocols to be able to take this to 8 billion people and allow Bitcoin to be a currency. The question is how many people know that and use it as a currency.
So then how do we switch that mentality? Because it seems like the greatest orange pillar, despite what we want to say, is basically number go up, right? Like that's when all the news outlets want to talk about Bitcoin. If you look at Google searches right now, the price has in dollar terms has been relatively flat, and Google searches are at basically the same level that they were at the beginning of this year. So, you know, how do we get that mentality shift? Do we need to feel so much pain? I mean, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of cracks underneath the surface, just macroeconomically, where, you know, we could feel a potential recession. Is that going to be a driving force where people more flee towards Bitcoin? Or is there a way that we can kind of I guess, convince people otherwise outside of number go up on, you know, the underlying issues here. Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power the show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well. If you could see it here, they've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
When you hear the truth, you know it. You might not get it right away or realize how your own actions impact the world you see. But when you hear the truth, you know it. So what you're doing right now, what I'm doing right now, is just telling people the truth. And that starts to spread and more people understand. It's the same thing that when you first saw Bitcoin and you saw it as a store of value to protect yourself from this, but you might not have seen it become a currency because it didn't matter to you as much. Your key use case from it was to protect your purchasing power. And then and by the way, the key use case for US dollar in Argentina is to protect your purchasing power. So it's understandable that a whole bunch of people in Argentina would see US dollar protecting their purchasing power relative to the Argentina peso. Now relative to US dollar, Bitcoin is a better store of value. And so each person inside of this thing is making their initial determination of what Bitcoin is, and what you just described as number go up might be one of the first things they see while reinforcing the existing system. And then through more and more time and understanding what this really is and how this is a paradigm change that we've never seen in the world, that there is no one alive today, no one alive ever, that has ever seen a protocol that could create the future where we're 8 billion people in service of 8 billion people. We've always lived in an extractive economy, so that's how our minds are wired. We think it has to look like that, whereas this imposes a new discipline. So that would be that. I would just say that's a hard thing for people to understand. And they start to see Bitcoin through the thing that helps them. And then as they go deeper and deeper and deeper, they start to see how it touches everything and it helps everyone. So how do you get people to understand one at a time?
Yeah, and that's fair to say. And I mean, you know, to your point too, right? I mean, we've been off the gold standard since 1971 officially, right? So that's been what, over 53 years at this point. So everybody that's in the working age at this point essentially has all worked in the current fiat system. So I guess it takes a lot of reprogramming to get away from that. And, you know, when I talk to my friends, the millennials, that kind of generation, you know, one of the main things I get is Bitcoin is too volatile, right? I mean, if I put X amount of dollars into Bitcoin, I see it go up, down, whatever, and they get all jacked up about the price. And I try to explain to them, look, we know how much Bitcoin is going to be circulated into the system every single day. We don't know how much US dollars are going to be, right? We just know that that's going to be exponentially more tomorrow than it is today. And that's why they're just programming to spending. So I think, yeah, in a sense, trying to reprogram that mind, do you think it starts almost at like the base layer of everything? Or do you think that there's a way that we can get there where, you know, we don't need to see a complete collapse, where we can kind of see a gradual, you know, mix into the hyper Bitcoinized world? Or do you think everything's going to have to crash and burn before we get to that point?
So you're explaining it as a light switch, and it won't look like a light switch. And that's, in fact, the thing that's like scaring people. And we'll do tons of views on videos because the algorithms are designed to be able to attract attention. And if you can sell a car crash or a hyperbolic statement, how high Bitcoin's going to go, the algorithm will pick it up because more people will watch it, because they're looking for tiny, tiny bits of information to reinforce their point of view and or be scared, or and those things travel really well. The truth is, I'm already living in that world. You are too. If you're pricing in Bitcoin, then your life is getting better and better and better on a basis tied into the free market, because all prices are falling relative to what you're doing, and they will forever. They'll keep on falling forever. That's what, and if you're trading with people inside Bitcoin and meeting people, and like we're investing in businesses, building these protocols and this transition, I see abundance and wealth everywhere. I see but I'm not saying just wealth and monetary wealth. I'm talking about the people and the type of people I get to work with every day, and what they're building, and how this positively impacts humanity. So when people ask, when will this happen? Well, it's happening. It's interesting to me, let's say.
Yeah. And that's fair. And I mean, I think it's just, I guess the lens, right? How you're viewing the world and kind of all of that aspect and everything like that. But, you know, in the current system that we're in, right? I mean, we just had Trump, RFK, like some of these biggest names kind of start to get into the Bitcoin space. Now, do you think that this is the start of the suddenly that Parker Lewis kind of famously coins, the gradually then suddenly, where we're going to start to see this rapid adoption? And like, because these quote unquote influencers are majorly influential people across the world, they're starting to get into it, that's going to be like that touch point that kind of brings people in? Or do you like just think it's all kind of part of this grift, and you know, these politicians still want to remain in power, so they're just telling you what you want to hear right now so they can get into office, and they're not going to really, maybe they're going to make it more difficult for you to live in this new system.
So just to go back to 2008, all of the people designing 2008, what happened in 2008, an extraction of value from taxpayers to centralized companies, they're still driving all of the, they're still in all the key positions, all of the same thing. Nothing, no one went to jail, just bailout, and it's centralized further. Same thing, fast forward to 2020 and COVID, and centralized further, exponentially further. And so all of the people inside the ecosystem trying to, remember, that system requires more theft from you to stay solvent. And so it doesn't matter what side you're voting on. It all of them, where does the money come from, to pay for the politicians and the lobby groups and everything else? It comes from the corporations that are incented to centralize further, and food systems that are centralized, and medical systems centralized, and the war machine that centralizes further. All of the money comes from that. So all of the people that the highly paid actors on top of that system are really saying, to who gets more of the money that comes from you to be able to keep this going, and it all has to be manipulated money or just manufactured money, printed money out of thin air to be able to create it. All of that comes from you, because the natural state of the market is deflation. In other words, in the natural state of the market, people trading with people around the world, every year your life gets better. Even if you don't work, prices fall. Every year, you get richer. Whether you work or not. If you work, then you get richer still. And the only reason you could work is provide value to somebody else. So the output of that is the world heals. If you create more value for somebody, the output is, because it has to compete with what came before it, right? So it destroys some jobs over here, and you provide more value and you get paid more. But the output of the destroying that is all of those people also prices fall for. and it gets easier. So anything that stops that is a control. It's not a free market. It's not an economic system. It's not a political system. It's a control system. And I'm amused by how many people are inside the control system fighting for which side of the control system is better when it all comes from them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting way to put it. And I mean, I know that you guys are very into Noster, you know, at your new fund and everything like that. And I want to dive into a little bit of that as well, because it seems like people kind of trade convenience for, you know, independence in a sense, right? Whether it's some sort of control or something like that, like tell me what to do, essentially. Now, you know, obviously, like a lot of Bitcoiners like recommend the sovereign individual and living that sovereign lifestyle. And it seems like that's just not really a huge desire of a lot of people. Like they want to, you know, be told what to do, not to think. Why do you think we've gotten to this point? Do you think it's because of like the current fiat system that we're in, that everybody has just kind of, I guess, almost fallen into some sort of like comfortability where, you know, it's like, hey, I got this cushy job. I never have to leave. I don't have to work super hard. I can go drive wherever it is. And that's just where they get in this like routine. And that's where, I guess, almost like the root of all of it is, because like, in a sense, the fiat system is all about control. Whether you look at the, you know, I mean, governments, the way they print the money, you know, keeping you in your job until you're 65, 401ks, all these things, seems like it's just stealing your time for, and it's not really utilizing it very well. And, you know, you're inflating away your currency, which is essentially what you're trading for your time. So do you think that that is like, I guess, where we need to get to start is more of like the sovereign thought process? Because, I mean, that's my biggest worry with everything, is that everybody just does not want to basically be independent. Yeah. Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GreenCandle at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
So humans weren't meant to live in cages. So just think of what we do throughout all of human society, throughout all of time. Everything that is around you right now is a construct of somebody's imagination and thoughts, right? First, it came as an idea. And where did the idea come from? It first came from trying to solve a problem. And then solving that problem created the value that everything around you, that's what we do. So when there's lots of problems, you could say this: scarcity powers innovation. So, but it's almost yin and yang. And so today, most people don't know it, but they're inside a system that's forcing them onto a loop. They have to work harder and harder and harder, and they think there's a solve from inside that system. So they're reaching out to it, which is dividing them, whether it's left or right of politics, and it's all dividing them, because it requires that division to keep them locked in. And so they're working harder and harder. And Bitcoin is like this prism. You could find it through any different way. You could find it through an insight of it solves one of your problems. And then you start to ask yourself, okay, what problem do I care about that could be solved by manipulating pieces of paper? And you find there's no problem that could be solved. And so as this centralizes further and it gets worse, then it actually powers the innovation to be able to solve that problem, because that's what we do as humans. So all the stuff that you see in Fedi and Fediment and Noster and Lightning and all of this ecosystem that's building a parallel path is actually moving faster than people could even imagine because this is centralizing. And as people are unplugging from the matrix and moving their time over to the new system that's built on truth, hope, and abundance, they're seeing themselves in it and they're contributing more time. And then they look over at the people stuck in the system and they go, oh my God, I was once stuck too. And now I see it. But that could come across like, and when you're talking to somebody that you've spent 10,000 hours doing the work on what this means, and they're still stuck in the matrix, it feels like really like, why can't they see it? And you forget that 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you couldn't see it either. And so it's just, it's a gradual transition. But that gradual, when you said suddenly, I don't think there is a suddenly. That's where I just don't, that gradual transition will speed up, but it'll speed up because these two systems are diametrically opposed. And one system has to concentrate. And that scarcity, what people will feel, the as their communications get shut down, or they get banned on Google, or they get, or they believe in a centralized actor like Elon Musk is going to save them, and he doesn't save them, and then he turns off the service somewhere because he was forced to turn off the service somewhere. As they believe all these things that get destroyed by this centralization, they move over their time to the system that is in fact, it powers it. It speeds the innovation. Why? Because we solve problems. As humans, we solve problems, and we will find a way to solve problems. And if there's these big problems of all this centralization and all of this control structure, trust me, it will not look like that, because humans were not meant to live in cages. We will solve the problems globally.
Yeah, so do you think then in the perfect world, the perfect hyper-Bitcoinized world, then everything is a free and open market, there's no more two-party systems, it's almost like one giant, you know, not Pangea, but kind of, right? Where it's like, you know, maybe there's no countries or borders, or do you see it as like...
It looks more like Star Trek. It looks like, you could say Star Trek versus Star Wars. That's the, that would be the... now, it's a long time to get there. And each country, you don't have to wait for your country to say yes. It's an open protocol. You don't have to wait for a business to say yes. You can move your time and energy right now. That's what you're doing. You're front running institutions and you're front running governments. Governments are going to be forced to. So let's just play this out. If Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, and governments want to print more pieces of paper to hire more people, Bitcoin doesn't care. It doesn't care at all. So then governments are going to be forced to play this is going to impose rules on governments, and the governments that and those governments are going to be elected or overthrown by people who impose the rules on those governments. this is going to transition around the world, but it's going to be chaotic. It's going to be chaotic like crazy, because very, very few people are measuring from the new system. They're measuring from the existing system, thinking that there's a savior inside the existing system, and there isn't.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all, yeah, I mean, that's fair to say, and I agree with you there too. And it's interesting, right? I mean, you brought up Elon Musk, the centralization, X just got banned in Brazil. So, I mean, I imagine that's gonna happen in more places, especially coming up on an election time and everything like that. But you brought up a point about if Bitcoin remains decentralized, what did you mean by that? Do you mean like, is that a worry of yours, or maybe it gets centralized or something like that? Because I mean, at this point,
I use that because it is the only thing that could stop the world that I'm talking about. So if it's the only thing, if we've never in 5,000 years of human history seen a protocol like Bitcoin, that, and all money was always captured, it was always centralized. So gold was captured, centralized. We go to war to reset gold or steal somebody else's gold or reprice it because it's centralized. It means it's also insecure as a protocol of money. And so all of the actions for all of our entire existence have tended towards centralization. And if you could control currency, you control your population. There is no law that can protect from you, because the law is just a piece of paper that gets overwritten by the centralized force that that controls the money. So that's the way. So laws are super. Money is superordinate to laws, and it always has been that way. So centralization or lack of centralization security, the lack of that in money, or a lack of decentralization security in money, has always led to these throughout time. It's always looked like this. We're used to looking through that. So if that's true, then that is a very extraordinarily high bar on Bitcoin, because you have to assume there were smart people throughout history too that knew of this risk. Right? You look through history, you see a whole bunch of people talking about Austrian economics. You see people talking about the kind of going back to religions about the love of money and the risk. So we always knew about this problem, but we could never resolve the conflict. That's the bar I put on the centralization or decentralization risk of Bitcoin. Because, and then through that bar, so if never could be stopped, the centralization, and we make the centralization stronger through our actions, why wouldn't that happen to Bitcoin? So then I look through that lens and I say, okay, Bitcoin layer one is pretty immune to it. When I say pretty immune to it, I'm very, very immune to it. And then I use that knowledge and I say, okay, if I knew everything I knew about this, how would I stop this? I would stop it at layer two. I would create Bitcoin I would create the US dollar system to gold, then to the petrodollar system, and then to Bitcoin. And then I would slow it down from that. And I would use, just like derivatives hold down the price of gold, it's not a true free market. You have all these paper instruments suppressing the price, and nobody knows how much gold is in whatever vault. You can't audit it, but nobody cares. They're using the paper instrument. That would be the natural thing that would happen. And everybody would fall into that trap, and everybody measuring Bitcoin price go up would actually be making that trap happen faster, because they're measuring price go up in the derivative instrument. And that's why we created, we funded things like FETI and technology that would allow Bitcoin to and funded Breeze and funded peer-to-peer technology on top of Bitcoin, Lightning and FETI, that would bring Bitcoin to 8 billion people as a medium of exchange and store of value, and produce a way to be able to escape that centralizing function. So in other words, you could see, if you just opened your eyes, you could see all of the next steps playing out, how they would have to play out to keep the control system intact, and how we, as users of of a control system, and we always lived in that, would make that stronger through our actions.
Now, does something like the ETF products being rolled out at the beginning of the year, is that something that you worry about potentially of centralization? BlackRock comes in, tries to scoop it up, a bunch of Bitcoin people utilize those products, or maybe even, you know, the US, the Fed prints a bunch of money to buy a bunch of Bitcoin before they announce it. I don't know. Are any of those scenarios, I guess, some that worry you in a sense of going forward?
Not any one in particular. It's the combinatory aspect of all of them together. It's and bigger than that, it's a combinatory aspect of people thinking in US dollars. Right? Because that is the thing that's allowing the centralization.
So then is the fiat system almost like the parasite, the disease that is just like ingrained in everybody's thinking here, where that's why the current system is the way it is?
It won't tell you that. I'm just saying, if you just think about, just look at it, opposite. And by the way, what we're talking about right now, so few people know, even if you're head of finance and BlackRock and everything else. So what would you see? All of the wealth came from extracting wealth from others through the financialization of the world, that would be everybody at the top of the system would be living in that paradigm. They would not see a system where 8 billion people are in service of 8 billion people, because we've never seen it in humanity. So from that, I'm not saying these are bad people or anything else, but you would just naturally see, okay, now how do I use Bitcoin? You might say to yourself, yes, we're going to make this more honest and we're going to peg to Bitcoin. But over time, if you have an instrument on top that isn't really real Bitcoin, it will be centralized no matter what.
Yeah, and it already seems like it already is, right? I mean, like the ETF products, the derivatives, everything in the traditional financial world. So do you think that the ETFs are a net negative for Bitcoin?
No, I think that if it was just that over time without the conversations like this, this is actually why I'm not really concerned about this, because once enough people know that something like this, they're building the technology rails all around the world to prevent that from happening, to prevent centralization, prevent all of that open market, that free market. Not all of it understands this, but enough of it understands this that is they're constantly looking for risks and they're vigilant. I'm one of those people that's vigilant against these risks and have been funding Jack Dorsey and funding all of these other things that that counteract that risk. And the developers in this community, or many of the developers and the deep heart people, the cypherpunks that understand what this means, they're talking, and you might not agree with them all the time. You might not agree with any one person all the time. You don't need to, but enough of them are swarming this problem and creating alternatives to the problem. And that's why I said, just the understanding of it alone creates more and more people that understand and contribute their time to the decentralization and security to be able to offset that risk. So I'm not particularly concerned about the centralization, because I understand the free market and I understand what people are doing right now. And once they too understand, they contribute their time.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But, you know, this is making me think, do you think we've ever experienced a true free and open market?
Never. Never. Now, so the U.S. did for some time. Why the founding fathers created that, and they escaped, right, the King of England and what that looked like, to create a free and open market, which attracted people from all over the world, that created one of the most robust empires world's ever seen, which created all of the technology, a bunch of the technology underlying the technology that the world sees today, because free and open markets are more productive. But then that gets captured, and the capture happens slowly, and then faster and faster and faster, and that's what's happening today. So for very small periods of time throughout history, Magna Carta, more freedom, more innovation. The Constitution, more freedom, more innovation. The output is wealthier societies. And then it gets captured and it swings back the other way. But globally, we've seen local maximums of freedom. You might be seeing some of that in El Salvador today. You've seen local maximums where people move to, and then it creates this abundance I'm talking about, but you've never seen a global market like this.
So, but you know, you brought up like the founding fathers of the U.S. Then what was the first act of, you know, I guess looking back at history that you could point to, or maybe it's multiple acts that you think that was, I guess, almost like the driving force of like massive centralization? Because I mean, I don't know. You always see the meme going on in Bitcoin Twitter, Nostr, and everything, where, you know, we were throwing tea in the harbor over a 3% tax, and now we're getting 40% tax, and nobody bats an eye. So obviously, that's, you know, a couple hundred years later. But at this point, it's like, you know, the disconnect is just not, is just so far from where we've been from our founding fathers. So what do you think was one of the driving forces that's brought us to this? Are you looking for a way to live on a Bitcoin standard? Have you been trying to do it? You just can't figure it out? Well, I've got it for you. It's at BitRefill. You can go to bitrefill.com/invite/greencandle to sign up, where you can use Bitcoin to buy gift cards on Airbnb, Uber. You can buy plane tickets with Bitcoin, so you can travel the world, see everything going on. You can even buy eSIMs when you're there to help contact your friends and family. So go ahead and join the revolution. Live on a Bitcoin standard so you don't have to wait for the banks after you sell your Bitcoin, transfer the fiat to your bank, and then go through all the rigmarole, all the fiat trash that you've tried to get through and avoid. Avoid all that. Use BitRefill and sign up here today, and I'll give you $5 towards everything that you are buying with BitRefill. All right, enough from me. Join the revolution on the Bitcoin standard, and back to the show
point. Yeah, so it's the founding fathers is based on hard money, and then what ends up happening is you have a free banking movement that the banking system, if you were one-to-one on gold, on hard money, then you couldn't offer much of a return. So then the next bank, your competitor, fractionalizes to 50% because not everybody comes back for gold at the same time. They're gold at the same time. So they fractionalize to 50% and offers a higher interest rate and more people use it. And then another competitor fractionalizes to 25% and offers a higher interest rate. And you have this explosion that nobody sees, and then 10% of it is, and then you have this hype cycle, and everybody races in, and then on the backside of that, everybody races in, and all these banks are insolvent, the ones that were giving the best rates. So then the fear from that, because the bank is insolvent, creates the government to create rules that allow more centralization, that we're going to come in and save the day, right, from all of these bad actors that were emboldened by people trying to take more risk and get a higher rate. So the bank comes, then the government comes in and says, we're going to save the day and we're going to decide who wins. We're going to create the Federal Reserve. Then the whole thing is great. So the fear of that creates the opportunity for centralized structures to save the day and concentrate monopoly power. Same thing right now is happening, by the way, in AI. Who do you think's promoting it? Because AI prices fall to the marginal cost of production, and the marginal cost of production of a line of code is zero. So the marginal cost of production of a line of code created by other lines of code is zero. So AI is free. So how do you pay for these enormous investments for a product that will turn into free because of competition of the free market? What you do is you convince a whole bunch of people that AI is going to be really scary, and you regulate it, and you create monopoly power around AI so you can price it high, and you control all of the actions created by all of their ideas that's sucking into the AI, that you can control them. That's what's happening in AI today. And all of the major players in AI all have lobbyists and groups convincing the public the AI is really scary.
Yeah, I mean, even Elon kind of tweeted out about AI regulation, saying that he believes that there should be some here in the future. So, I guess, how do we get away from that, or in a sense, get to a place where we're using almost like a decentralized AI where it doesn't have any bias in it? Is that even possible? Do you think that there's a way to move towards AI with that? Because
it will naturally so from Bitcoin it naturally moves there because prices fall, and the amount of these AI companies that are going to be blown up because prices fall and distributed widely to the benefit of yourself. So right now, for anybody listening to this, go download GPT-4 4all.com. You can have all of the models, all of these open source models, and you can compete against each other for free on your laptop and never need the internet for it. You can upload the model. As models keep on getting better and better, you can upload new models. You can compete them all against each other. You don't have to pay for AI right now. Most people do. But you can have these models right now on your laptop. In other words, you have the entire human history of knowledge on your laptop without an internet connection for free. Now how do you create money against that? The natural state is prices keep falling to the marginal cost of production. Now in Bitcoin, that is what's happening, but most people are measuring from the unnatural state of money printing. And the unnatural state of money printing centralizes all power in very few hands.
So in this state, then, because I want to get into like kind of like the company aspect of it too, because that always interests me. With like, you know, it seems like the Amazon almost made the popular model where a bunch of money got dumped into Amazon. They didn't make any money for a while. Then all of a sudden they create AWS out of a need for their company. And then now Amazon is what it is today. But originally, the online bookstore of Amazon, didn't really make too much money. It had the dot-com boom, all this kind of stuff. But it seems like it was all kind of, you know, don't make money until it meets this inflection point, and then it all of a sudden takes off. And that's been very popular in the tech sector, too. You know, kind of like evaluating companies based on the traditional value investing principles is seemingly dead at this point. And it's a lot of just, you know, boom and bust cycles. Now, well, moving into more of a Bitcoin free and open market almost killed that model off, where, you know, unless your company is providing true value and actually, you know, creating revenue, it won't succeed, because you won't have that money being able to back you. You won't have the banks giving you money at, you know, low percentage point loan where you're able to get a quick injection in and then boom. Or is there still, I guess, a need for that going forward?
Yeah, so play this forward in a lot of the companies that were created in that time. So you had the other lever of money, the price of money, being essentially free. If you didn't take zero interest rate or not, and then venture capital driving tons of that, and then because your rates were so low, in some regions of the world, negative. So venture capital attracted more capital because they wanted to play, and that capital went into companies. And if you didn't take capital at a time when capital was free, and your company and your competitor did and grew really fast at your expense, you're dead. Now, if capital got expensive, so you could say at zero rate cost of capital, then growth, the value of growth is almost infinite. So people way overpay for growth because they expect one day that growth to mean something. And then as the cost of capital goes up, it just liquidates all of these and it cycles. So entrepreneurs right now are caught in this market of back and forth and back and forth, and they're getting annihilated. They don't know they're caught in it. Many entrepreneurs don't know they're caught in it. I can tell you from investing in Bitcoin companies that my rate of return in Bitcoin the terminal rate of, or the IRR in Bitcoin last 15 years is 45%. So I would not make an investment unless I expect an over 45% return per year. Now it'll be volatile on the way there, but that's my IRR my rate of return I expect is 45%. So how do I beat that? And so then why would I create a venture? Why would I help co-found venture company in Bitcoin is because I expect to beat that by funding companies that are turning profitable and transacting in Bitcoin and denominating their balance sheets in Bitcoin. So they're creating more Bitcoin on their balance sheets really quickly as they're growing. And so two of our portfolio companies in a portfolio that's only 2.5 years old are already profitable. Three are already profitable and adding Bitcoin to the balance sheets every month. And by the way, that normally doesn't happen in seed rounds in the fiat world. So you have a seed or an A, and then these companies are turning profitable. And they don't need more capital. they're both building the new system and creating value by doing so. And so a simple way to look at it would be, what if you were in Argentina in the year 2000 and you could have invested in Google and got your Argentina money traded for US dollars? That's what we're doing in Bitcoin. And it looks totally different. So instead of having series seed, A, B, C, D, E, public, and these companies still not profitable, it's true value investing. It's growth and value investing. It's like nothing I've ever seen. But you really have to understand what this is and where the companies can create value in a world where prices are falling all the time. So it's a different it's a different way of looking at things. But I can't believe there's not way more capital chasing this opportunity, because it's such an asymmetric bet. It's crazy.
Then do you think there's no room for Bitcoin companies to go public at that point, because they don't need that injection of liquidity?
I love that. We've thought long and hard about this. So why would you go public? Injection of liquidity, or lower cost of capital, or an exit strategy. Those are the reasons you go public, because the trade-off of doing everything else, unless you need that, is just too much of a trade-off in regulation and everything. So I suspect that some of the companies that we're building will be the new backbones of what will look like a public exchanges going forward. That'll move us to become a transition to a Bitcoin economy. I also suspect that some will never need to do that. Some might look like utilities today, where you have a dividend forever in Bitcoin terms.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I guess with that would this almost create a separation where, you know, right now as it stands in the US, you need to be an accredited investor to, you know, participate in a lot of these seed rounds, where you need basically like to have made over $200,000 for 2 years in a row, or have, assets worth over $1 million, not including your house. So that prices a lot of people out. So in this sense, would this, I guess, not let people be able to, like the average pleb, to really be able to invest in a lot of these Bitcoin companies? Or do you think that there's going to be changing of regulation in that sense, where, you know, maybe you can kind of find a way in?
Yeah, I don't know if there'll be so much changing. I suspect the regulation will get worse, not better. And because all that regulation, I just laugh all the time. You have regulation to protect your money from a system designed to steal your money. So what would that look like? And so all of that infrastructure and cost, it gets worse and worse over time. I expect that to continue, and maybe disjointed or chaotically continue. But if you already hold Bitcoin and you're already thinking in Bitcoin, there is going to be opportunities to get into companies that you want to get involved in, or work with companies that you want to get involved in. And you're having an entire rebuild of an infrastructure based on honest money right now, on a protocol based on honest money. And that's exploding. Nostr's a part of it. Fediment's part of it. Cashew's a part of it. Lightning is part of it. Liquid is a part of it. All of these things, and they're all interoperable with each other, and so there's so much value that it's getting easier and easier and easier, because that's the interoperability of all of this, to be able to build value for other people on top of this.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to continue, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I guess in a free and open market, looking into the future, do you see a place maybe like El Salvador, for example? I know like Strike has moved its headquarters down there. Would you see it, I guess, like more appealing, because it seems like everybody goes to where the incentives are, right? So maybe, you know, El Salvador, for example, allows the investment of these companies to change a little bit if they're headquartered down there. And could you see, you know, a country like that trying to make it more appealing so more companies are headquartered down there, and, you know, maybe the U.S. regulation becomes too stringent so companies start to mass exit it, the U.S., and that's kind of like the driving force?
Yeah, so the U.S. Constitution, because of the state power, is going to be really difficult to, and I don't think U.S. citizens are going to stand for a centralization function of their entire country. I think you have states breaking loose before that. But El Salvador is a really good example tied to what the U.S. Constitution did in the first place, right? You had a free and open market, and you had a competition for people, the best people, moved to take advantage of that free and open market because they were hurt in the other market. They weren't given the same opportunity as the aristocrats and wealthy elite who were extracting the power. So they moved. And that's what's happening. And that is the foundation of what created the U.S. And it will be the foundation of what creates El Salvador, assuming El Salvador sticks with that plan, or Argentina, assuming Argentina sticks with that plan. I suspect in Canada on the next election that in Canada we will have a changing of the guard and a way more open free market, which would bring Bitcoin adoption in a big way into Canada. But every country is going to be competing for people through that process in time, whether they know it or not.
There we go. I like it. Well, Jeff, last time you were on the podcast, we had a lot of people have some comments about the guitars in the background. So I'm going to do some fun rapid fire questions for you that will maybe give people a little peek behind the hood on who Jeff Booth is outside of the Bitcoin space. So the first question I got for you, who is your favorite band of all time?
Oh, I don't have that. I'm so eclectic on that. I would say, yeah. I used to play a ton of Neil Diamond and stuff just because it was good campfire sing-song music, but all over the map. Now probably a lot of country.
Okay. Then what is your best concert you've ever been to?
Oh, God.
I don't think I've ever stumped you on a question, Jeff.
You stumped me on a. You know why? It's like it's the same thing as somebody asks you what book is your favorite. I just if you've read so many or gone to pass.
All right. Then what is it? You mentioned Neil Diamond already, but what's your favorite song to play on the guitar?
Wagon Wheel.
All right. And then will we see you play at a Bitcoin conference in the future? I know they do Satoshi Rakamoto. Are we going to see Jeff Booth, playing at one point in time?
No way. I'm more sit around a campfire and play there. We'll see. I'll be the after concert.
Okay. I like it. Then, all right. So then your campfire activity is playing, but what else do you like to do at a campfire? Are you a s'mores guy? Or are you, sit, drink a beer, smoke a cigar, scotch? What's the vibe on a Jeff Booth campfire?
No cigar, but scotch or beer, I'd do that.
All right. Awesome. Then what kind of beer drinker are you? Last question. Are you an IPA guy, blonde? What kind of
thing? Used to be, now lager.
Okay, nice. Well, Jeff, you've been very generous. Thank you for giving us a little peek behind the hood. Hopefully we'll hear you at the concert after the concert at the next Bitcoin conference. But why don't you tell people, I guess, where they can find you, find out more about what you're doing, and maybe help support the cause of what you guys are helping build with all these Bitcoin companies.
Yeah, so that would be Ego Death Capital. If you're looking to get into this ecosystem from capital standpoint, or if you're an entrepreneur wanting capital, send a note to us at ego death capital. jeffbooth.ca is my personal website, and I only call that out because if social media listing is not on that site, it's not me. So people are getting scammed all the time by impersonators, and so please be careful. I will never ask you for money.
There we go. And I'll put all that in the show notes. And Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.